we learn how Moshe was davening and davening and davening and davening because he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. And certainly Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the Anav Mikol Adam, who learned and received the Torah directly from Hashem on Har Sinai, was up on Har Sinai three times for 40 days each, knew and understood the importance of Eretz Yisrael. You know, we all dream to go to Eretz Yisrael, right? Everybody wants to go, and we save up, and if you went to seminary and you want to go back, and if you didn't go to seminary and you still want to go, like, it's always a dream in our mind to go to Eretz Yisrael. And why? Because we know it has Kedusha, and we want to daven at the Kosel, and yeah, you know, maybe also while we're there, we'll go on a camel or something, some ATV in the desert, whatever it is that we picture as what we want to accomplish and why Eretz Yisrael is so special. Moshe Rabbeinu understood the importance of Eretz Yisrael, and he was davening to go in. And finally, you know, over 500 tefillos, and finally Hashem says to him in the Pasuk, he tells him, stop. Enough. Please stop davening for this, because as much as you want to, and as much as you think this is the best thing that could happen to you, it's not. And Rashi comments, Rav Tov Hatzafun Lecha. There is something so much greater that I have hidden and stored away for you than going to Eretz Yisrael. You think that Eretz Yisrael is the best thing that could happen to you, but I have something better. And again, I felt shivers up my spine. And I repeated that to myself. And I said, you think, Hashem is telling Moshe, you think you know what you want, and you have all the right reasons why you want that, but I have something better for you. What I have for you is better. And I remember, like, just again, frozen in my place, thinking, I had a picture in my mind of what my life should look like and how I planned out my life and what it should be. And Hashem is saying, no, Shein Dal, Rav Tov Hatzafun Lach, I have something better for you. You think that what you wanted was the best that you could be, but no, there's something better for you. And at the end, I want to share with you, I actually made it into a magnet, because it was something that stuck with me, and it was something that really helped me to say, no, we think we know what we want, but there's something better for us. And I walked around the house, you know, repeating it to myself a few times. And then I called my sister, and then I called my friend, and I'm like, you have to hear this. Like, you have to, like, look at this Rashi and pay attention to what it's saying. So those are two things that, like, helped me visualize what my new situation was and how to come to terms with it. They didn't happen chronologically necessarily in that order. They didn't happen maybe a day apart from each other. This was a whole process. Like, I'm talking to you now, it's been 9 years. Like, I've had time to digest this. I've had time to process this. And I'll discuss a little bit more as I go on. So what are some techniques that we can use to get ourselves through times which are challenging or just the daily grind? So I'll share with you a few of them. Number one, I think is most important, and then some of them are kind of in order of importance, and then it all just gets to be a big blur. But number one, talk to Hashem. You know, everybody says tefillah, tefillah, daven, daven, which is true. And there were some days that it was too hard to daven because there was just too much going on. And especially in the initial days when I myself was in the hospital, I was hospitalized for 8 days, and I couldn't daven. I was in the hospital, I was hospitalized, I was finding out what was going on with my husband. And I knew that worldwide people were saying Tehillim for us, and especially for my husband. There was a rally in Ottawa, like spontaneously they were able to get out 250 people to come and say Tehillim. Now, 250 people in New York might not sound like a big deal, but in Ottawa, like 250 people, that would be, that's just huge. On a short minute's notice to come say Tehillim, like, we're talking about people who, many of them, are unaffiliated. So, talk to Hashem. And I remember, like, calling our Rebbeim and saying, like, I can't daven. Like, everyone's saying Tehillim, everyone's davening. Am I supposed to be davening, davening? They said, no, your job is not to daven right now, but talk to Hashem, right? Avodah Shebalev. Talking to Hashem is a kesher with Hashem, making a connection with Hashem. So when you're speaking to Hashem, you're having a connection to Hashem. You're davening in your own words. You're davening in your heart. You're davening in your mind. You're speaking to Hashem. You're making Hashem part of your life every single day. And that's what I did. I would, like, daven. Like, wake up, please, Hashem, let my husband feel well today. Please, Hashem, let everything go okay. And those words like that and things like that were always on my lips. Hashem, my kids have to get out to school on time. You guys, please help me. I need to get my kids out to school on time. Whatever it was, just talking and asking and just always at your lips, just asking and beseeching and asking and thanking Hashem for whatever it is that's going on that time. Another thing which helped me was chazals. So again, if I wasn't able to daven, or if I was in the middle of something and I couldn't daven, different times at different stages, there were different chazals that stuck with me. Thank you. There were different chazals that stuck with me, and there's chazals that meant a lot to me at the time, or it just progressed. It was different things or different times. You know, at the very beginning, you know, when I was being taken for some CAT scans and MRIs, and I didn't know what to say. I couldn't move, and I was just saying, Lishi waspa ki visi Hashem, ki visi Hashem, Lishi waspa, Hashem, Lishi waspa ki visi. Just again and repeat, just the words of Chazal, just again and again and again. And over the course of the years, like, just different Chazals that resonated with me, different psukim that resonated with me at different times. Again, just at your lips, and just to have that kesher, just to have that connection of being able to ask Hashem, to talk Hashem, to realize where everything is coming from and who is the only one that could help you. And of course, you know, do your hishtadlis, but recognize, like, the only one who could make the hishtadlis work is Hashem. I saw a cartoon recently that actually, you know, it made me laugh, and I said, I think it really describes my life. It was a picture of a person talking to themselves. There was nobody else in the room. And it says, please excuse me. I am self-employed. If you see me talking to myself, that just means I'm having a staff meeting. So I'm like, bingo, you know? Talk to yourself, you know? Like, I'm talking to myself, like, just reminding yourself, just pep talk, okay? You can do the shingle, you can do this, you got this. Okay, just breathe. Just one, two, you can do this. Keep going, you can do this, it's okay. You've been through worse, it's not so terrible, it will be over soon, whatever it is. You know, I guess it sounds really odd. I hope there's no psychologist here. you know, I'm like encouraging you to talk to yourself, but, you know, talk to Hashem, talk to yourself, pep talk yourself, and just really, it just helps to keep you grounded. It just helps to really, you know, keep things in perspective and not, you know, just to tone things down when it's so easy to fly off the handle, or it's so easy to just crumble or feel completely overwhelmed. It just kind of is, you know, a balancing, something that to help you create that balance. Another thing that could be helpful to some people is, you know, this is a conversation that I remember having with a friend, and some of these things I didn't realize I was doing until I had to actually sit down and, like, formulate them. So we were going through some hard time, I don't remember what it is at the point now, you know, and my kids were in school. They were coming home, like, at 4:15. And I knew, like, whatever was going on, my husband was not doing well, caregivers were quitting, whatever. Everything was, like, topsy-turvy. Everything was upside down. And all I knew was that at 4:15, this was about 4 o'clock, at 4:15, my kids were going to come piling through the door, and if I thought things were topsy-turvy until then that was it. You know, homework, supper, you know, all the kvetches, all the everything. Okay, everything was going to break loose. So I was on the phone with a friend. And she said to me, Shane, though, what are you going to do, like, when your kids come home? I said to her, Tivi, I don't know. All I know, Tivi, is I'm looking at my watch. It's 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, I'm going to do 4 o'clock. And at 4:01, I'll do 4:01. I'm not up to 4:15 yet. I'm still on 4 o'clock. And it was like literally days where it's 4:01. That's it. Just get through 4:01. 4:02, you got through 4:02. You got through 4:03. 4:04. And somehow I made it to 4:15. And I was like, okay, no, this for sure, that's it. Like, I'm not making that. And somehow, you know, I don't even remember what was going on that day, but we survived to tell about it, so I guess, you know, I guess it worked. So that was it. It was like there were times when it was minute by minute. There were times when it was day by day. Times when it was week by week or month by month. And there were times I said to people, I don't know, I'm making it up as I go along. If I wake up in the morning and my husband is still here, then that means we had a good night. Things are great. If we went to sleep at night and, you know, we're still here, it means we had a great day. That was it. Like, anything could have happened. But if we're still here, good day. You know, everything was fine to some extent. Another thing to realize is that sometimes we feel very pressured, or we pressure ourselves that we have so much to do and we have so many things that have to get done and we have to do this and we have to do that. Really, we don't. Really, when on a daily basis, what we really need to do is make priorities. We have things that, yeah, there's like a list, you know, from here to tomorrow of all of the things that have to be done. But when it all boils down to it, in the amount of time that we have in a day, and I don't think this extra hour that we got yesterday helped me any. I don't know. Maybe for you, I don't feel I'm any more productive yesterday or today than I was any other day. I don't know. But as many hours as we have in the day, we always feel like we have to do more. And we have things to be done. And we have this whole list and we're never getting through it. But we just have to prioritize. And sometimes, some things just don't get done. And sometimes, that's okay. It's okay to go easy on yourself. And we're not going easy on ourselves because we're not doing something, because we still did all those other things that we needed to do and we managed to do. So there are things that, you know, whatever, you know, what they say, the squeaky wheel gets the grease or something like that. So whatever screamed loudest, that's what got done. I was pulled in a million different directions. I didn't know where to turn first. I didn't know what to do first. Like, there were some days, I kid you not, where, you know, people had been sending over food for meals and this and that. I said, no, this Shabbos I want to cook myself. I'm going to make the soup. And my friends are like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, what's the big deal to make soup? Anybody could take a pot and throw in some vegetables and fill it with water and some chicken, right? And they're like, okay. So I got as far as putting the pot on the counter. And I forgot, I don't remember what was going on. I'm like, yeah, right. No, I don't have time to make soup. I just don't. And then I was like kicking myself, like, what do you mean you don't have time to make soup? Like, put the pot under the faucet. But it wasn't happening. And literally my friend came, picked up my pot, took my vegetables that someone else had bought for me, picked up the chicken that someone else had bought for me, brought it to her house, made the soup, and brought it back. It was a matter of just priorities. So that would be like a big example, but we have that every day in our life. There are things that need to be done and things that can wait. And sometimes things just have to wait a little bit longer. And I guess I figured at some point, like, if it didn't get done, then it must not have needed to be done in the first place anyway. So, you know, don't make yourself crazy. Another thing that we had at home on our wall in Ottawa, in my husband's office in our new accessible home, my husband had an office there. We had his exercise equipment and he had his computer. So due to the paralysis that he had, he wasn't able to move his arms. So he couldn't type on a computer. So he had a voice-activated computer where he would speak on a mic into the computer, and the computer would type the words that he said. It wasn't foolproof. It was very, very painstaking. He had to redo it a lot. He was a perfectionist. He was a whiz at writing before the accident. He had a way with words. He really had a way of reaching people. And he wanted to make sure that, you know, anything that he typed was perfect. He started a blog, Rolling Rabbi, where he spoke about his circumstances and gave chizuk to himself and to other people. And in that room, which we called his command center, because, you know, that whole, what we started talking about being an Obed Hashem and a Marvitz Torah, we didn't know what that meant anymore. Because in our minds, Harbatzas HaTorah had only one shape and one form, and that meant classroom, people, house, party, chumash, and now what? How are you Marvitz Torah now? How do you still go about being an Eved Hashem now when you're so compromised? And in the initial, I'd say, days, weeks, months, even probably years of the accident, we cried a lot about that. And we asked Rebbeim, now what? How do you be a Marvitz Torah when you can't move? You can't get into the classroom. How do you be an Oved Hashem when you thought that being an Eved Hashem was, you know, a picture that you can't be part of anymore? And he found a new way, and the Rebbeim reassured us that Hashem had a plan, and that we didn't know what the answer was, and we may or may not figure out the answer, but certainly there was an answer, and just kind of let the situation unfold and develop and see what happens. And he became a Marvitz Torah through giving speeches, through his blog, and anytime he was invited to speak somewhere, which was a milestone in of itself, if he was able to go somewhere, certainly to travel was a very big deal. And anytime he did manage to go somewhere, and there was always a flyer, you know, for whatever speech or whatever talk that he was giving, we would take the flyer and hang it on the wall. And we had, we called it the chizuk wall. It was the wall where, it's not that, you know, it wasn't a boasting or like a bragging, gaivadik wall. We're like, I spoke here and I spoke there and I spoke to these people. It was more like, okay, I can do this. I can, you know, I can still be a Marvitz Torah. I can speak to this place on Skype and I can go to this place and, you know, physically in person and all kinds of things like that. Any milestone was hung on the wall. And that was his way. We did it for both of us. And something else that I found was as I would come across things that I read or things that I saw that resonated with me, certain sperm that I would read or, you know, other quotes or other things, I would copy them or cut them out, and I kept them in a folder. And I still have that folder, and I still, you know, refer back to some, you know, some of the pages are actually wrinkled because I've reread them so many times. So that's just also something that we can do, you know, just something, you know, give chizuk to yourself, you know, pat yourself on the back for some of the accomplishments, for the things that you've done that were hard for you, that you actually worked hard and you achieved, you did. Words that to live by, words that mean a lot to you and that you can take forward with you. And that, you know, ties in with the importance of having, you know, a rav, a mentor, a friend, a therapist, somebody that you can reach out to, somebody that can help you to talk things through, figure things out, somebody that you can bounce off of, a sounding board, and explain things to you and help you through whatever it is, whatever situation that you're going through. And one thing also that I think is also super, super important is to recognize the hashgacha pratis in our life. So many times things happen to us and either we take them for granted or we don't realize them. But if we just pay attention and we look out for what we call those hugs from Hashem, how Hashem is looking out for us and Hashem is taking care of us. So we see that Hashem puts us in a situation and Hashem tests us, and we have a certain situation happen to us, But he doesn't leave us to be like paddling uphill, you know, upstream without a paddle. Hashem is always handing us paddles, and he's handing us like tools to help us in our situation, to help us to get by. I'll give you some examples that I can think of that, you know, it sounds like they happen in books, but they happen in real life. If you look out for them, then you'll notice them. I was traveling from Ottawa. I had left my husband home for, I think, 24 hours. My daughters were in high school. They were having a performance in Rochester, and I felt that it was important to be there for them at their performance, but I couldn't leave my husband for an extended amount of time. It's a four-hour trip from Ottawa to Rochester. So literally, I was gone door-to-door 24 hours, and I piled my kids in the car. We drove down to Rochester, and it was in March. It was probably about Purim time or so, and the shopping experience in Canada is not like New York. So I was already, I was like on the New York side. I'm like, okay, it's March. It's Purim time. That means Pesach is coming. My kids are going to want something new for Pesach. They were still little then. I could get away with this then. I probably couldn't get away with it now that they're bigger. So I was like, okay, I know that off the highway, like in Watertown, which is about 2 hours from home, halfway between Rochester and home, there is a mall. And in the mall, there's like a Marshalls or TJ Maxx, one of those. I was like, okay, I have zero time to go shopping, but zero. My kids are going to want something new. Pesach is coming. I said, okay, I have however many minutes. I pulled into the parking lot, drove off the highway, pulled into the parking lot, said, okay, everybody, I had one of the older kids, or was somebody who was old enough to be with the kids in the car, stayed in the car. I ran out, ran inside. I'm like, Hashem, my kids need something for Yatzef. I have zero time. I ran into the store, ran to the rack of size small, whatever size, whatever, 6, 8, 10, whatever they were at the time, little kids. I pulled something off the rack. I'm like, perfect. What do you know? Marshalls, they had a matching one. When is the last time you went into Marshalls and you actually found two of the same things, right? So I went to Marshalls. I found the matching outfit for my three girls, grabbed them, ran and paid, and went out. I was like, thank you. Like, that was a hug from Hashem. Hashem was helping me, because what are the odds of, like, going and in 5 minutes or less finding an outfit that fits your kid and matches and that they like? That's a nice, you know, that's like really big, you know? So that was that, you know, sneakers for my kids. It was, you know, school was starting, the kids needed new shoes. I'm telling you, now I moved to New York, my kids are like, I don't know, we need shoes, and they're like spending hours and hours contemplating shoes. I'm like, are you kidding me? In 3 months, no one's going to even recognize what color they are anymore. They're going to be falling apart. Could we not just get shoes already? I'm like, no, we have to find the right ones. Okay. But back in the day, you know, I went shopping before school started, and literally in I don't know how many minutes, my kids got shoes. It was like a nice. You know, over the years when my husband was ill, my kids did not get sick. No strep, no ear infections, nothing. I never had to take my kids to the doctor. My car never broke down. You know, hugs from Hashem. Things that we can see how Hashem is looking out for us and taking care of us. You know, going out shopping, finding a parking spot in Borough Park. Wow! You know, like right in front of where you want. Just look out for the hugs of Hashem. Hashem is there. Hashem is taking care of you. And he's trying to make things so much easier for you. So I know it's getting late. I could probably talk for hours, but there's more. But this, I just want to leave you with just a taste of, you know, what we can do on a daily basis. So I just want to wrap up with, like, the you know, closing thought. One of the things that I did when my husband got ill again, so there was different stages of the illness. There was the recovery and the rehab process, and he was stable for several years and actually getting stronger to whatever degree he could get strong. We actually made a trip to Eretz Yisrael. That's all the whole story by itself, how he managed to get to Eretz Yisrael. But after that, you know, he had a big decline, and he was respirator dependent, had a feeding tube, and things were not looking very good. Like, it was really the doctors weren't sure if he was going to make it. So, and he survived 2.5 years after that. So one thing that I did was, since I do love to teach, and there is a need in Ottawa for, you know, more Torah learning in the community, I had started, you know, a women's evening, like once a week I was doing a women's course. And my symbol that I did, you know, I gave it a cutesy name and I had a little symbol, and I chose the butterfly. And the reason I chose a butterfly is because I felt that it symbolized what I was going through. And it symbolized just life in general. So if you look at a butterfly just by itself, they're kind of dainty. I've always had this thing for butterflies. I've always wanted to go. I think by Niagara they have this butterfly exhibit. I've always wanted to go. I haven't. We went to a butterfly exhibit once. They had one in Ottawa when my kids were small, like this room filled with butterflies, and they're just like delicately like floating around and landing on, you know, one of my kids' nose. We have a picture of my baby daughter with like a butterfly on her nose. But if you think about where a butterfly comes from and what is a butterfly undergoes a metamorphosis, right? It starts off as a caterpillar and it totally changes. It becomes a whole new being. It becomes something completely different. And that's, I think, a symbol, like a metaphor for our life, like who we are today and who we were yesterday and last week should not be the same, right? If the purpose of my neshama is to be the best that we can and to accomplish as much as we can, then we have to change. We have to grow. We can't be the same yesterday as we are today. And tomorrow or in 2 days, we should not be the same as we are today. And I chose the butterfly to show that different things in our life, they shape us, they mold us, they help us become the best that we can become. They help us to become who we are. And, you know, we try to get through those moments, you know, as gracefully as we can, you know, maybe like a butterfly, graceful, but undergoing change and becoming better because of it. And that's, you know, really what I feel like, you know, over the last 9 years, I'm not the same person today as I was, you know, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, 6 years ago. I want to share with you as the final closing thought. This is from A Touch of Purity by Rabbi Yechiel Spiro. It was actually a book that a friend had gotten me the very first Yomim Nuraim. Like, the accident happened in June. So she gave this to me in September. And I have paper clips here of different thoughts that I come back to. So he quotes Rav Tzadok HaKohen in the Sefer Resisei Laila. It describes the shofar gadol, the great shofar, the sound that we are waiting for to signal the end of our galus. He says that it will be an accumulation of all the cries throughout our exiles, the cries of those who had to suffer at the hands of their tormentors, the cries of those who watched their children, siblings go through whatever, crusades, Nazis, Arabs, all kinds of things. And he gives different examples of different times of challenge throughout Jewish history. And he says something very interesting. He says, it is not just that the cries of everybody over the years will signal Hashem to sound the shofar. It's not that when there's a certain level of cries that has been reached. Rather, these cries will form together to be that sound. So the sound of all the cries that everybody has cried together is going to be the sound of the shofar. What a comforting thought. Now that we know that our cries are not for naught, we may be forced to endure unbearable suffering, physical pain, and emotional grief. But our cries are heard and put aside for safekeeping like a cherished memento until the time will come when those cries accumulate to produce the sound of the shofar gadol. And when that happens, all those who wanted to do more and become more who could not will also cry out in our hearts, and they will all join together. All of our brethren will join together to be able to march to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu. And that's ultimately what we are davening for, that we greet Mashiach and Hashem saves us from everything that we are going through, and that we should only have simcha and nachas and bracha in our lives. I want to just leave you over here if anyone wants to come up after. I have those magnets that I was telling you about. So it says Rav Tov HaTzafun. It has the name of the, it has the pasuk, the Maimon Makomos of which Rashi is from. It says, I have something better for you. And I have them on my fridge, and sometimes when I think, I have something better for you. It says on it that it was as a zechus for a refuah shleimah for my husband, because that's when it was originally done. So talking about priorities, I did not get to changing them. So just, as you know, anyone who gets any chizik from this, it should be a, you know, as a chus, as a lias neshama for Yehuda Pinchas ben Yitzhak Isaac. Thank you.